This is Radio Kate at the World Conference of Science Journalists in Qatar, and we've just had the final session, a very interesting session about the role of journalism and democracy. And we heard from people from Sudan and from Tunisia and from Egypt talking about the Arab Spring in particular. And now a part of my heart belongs to Egypt. There's a long story behind that, but I was very sad when they moved the conference from Cairo to Doha, because I was looking forward to going back there. But we have a taste of Egypt here. I'm with Mohamed Yahya, is that correct?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Who you can follow on Twitter as Mohamed Y.
Exactly.
So you were in the middle of everything in Cairo.
Yes, I was all throughout the whole thing. I mean, I missed the first day because I was traveling, but once the revolution started, I just cut my trip and went straight back home.
There is something about traveling. If something happens in your country when you're away, I certainly felt this. I was in Bolivia when the 7/7 bombings happened in London, and it was the one thing of all my travels around the world that made me feel I need to be there for London. Did you have that kind of same pull?
Exactly. It was insane. I was in London actually at that time, and I started seeing some footage on TV and of the violence and the brutality from the police and the shooting, and people have died, and it's just crazy. I just couldn't stay there anymore. It was just insane. I stayed one more day. I tried to continue. I couldn't, so I just booked the first plane out, and I had to go back. It didn't make sense for this to be happening so far away. I just couldn't do it anymore.
Mm-hmm. I mean, and how expected was it? Because it came not so long after the Tunisian stuff. I mean, was it? Do you think that had a kind of knock-on effect?
It was definitely inspired by the Tunisian revolution. But if you say how expected it was not expected. I mean, I knew there was something on the 25th. I didn't think it would be a big deal because we've had past demonstrations before. That's why I traveled. I didn't think it would be something to be there for. Actually, a while before that, I wrote on my blog that I don't think that the same thing that happened to Tunisia is going to happen in Egypt, which I feel very ridiculous to saying right now. The blog post is still there, and someone just commented there that, are you going to retract that now? And I was like, I don't know. But my impression was that what moved the revolution in Tunisia was really an educated population. But we didn't have that strong, educated population in Egypt, which was why I thought it wouldn't happen. So it was completely unexpected. And every person who was in Egypt on the 25th, they said they went down and they expected they wouldn't find anyone. And then they just found everyone on the street. So it was completely unexpected, but it was definitely fueled by what happened in Tunisia. It was that idea of maybe we can do something, maybe something can happen. But I would say that when it started out, people were not even calling for the fall of the regime. It just started out, people were calling for the removal of the interior minister, who was obviously convicted of several cases of torture and death in police stations. And people just wanted small changes, and here's his removal, some democratic rights, and that's it. But then the way the regime reacted, that is what got the expectations and the demands skyrocketing. I would say that the tipping point was when they started killing people, because once they started killing people, it was just it just became unexpected. It didn't become just people asking for more rights. It became there was blood spilled. You know, there was blood now. There was no way we can accept that to continue that kind of rule, which is ironically, I mean, sometimes I always say that the regime led to this. Every time the Mubarak came out with a speech and then some people would go back, there would be some horrible brutality and violence the following day, and people would up their demands again, and then he'd come up with a speech and some people would reject, and then something else would happen. So it always this cycle, and that's what led at the end to this huge, huge movement on the street, which erupted out of Tahrir on the last day. I mean, the last day it wasn't in Tahrir anymore. There were people camping in Tahrir. Others had went to the presidential palace. It just erupted across the country. It was just completely uncontrollable.
I mean, I was watching this all from afar. I was in America at the time, but I was following tweets from Nadia and as many things that I could on social media, and the Al Jazeera live blog was very good. But, I mean, what was it like for you? You decided to leave London, you got on a plane, and you get back to Cairo. What did you find when you stepped off the plane?
Well, like I said, I mean, the whole thing is that we have got together, me and my friends, and we've talked endlessly about how horrible things are, how horrible conditions are, the lack of freedom, how Mubarak was grooming his son to take over after him. But we couldn't do anything. So when I felt there was a movement, there was something happening, I knew I had to be part of that. And when I got off the plane, I remember the first thing that happened was I was in the airport and there was this policeman. And I said, and there was some news that that Mubarak had removed the interior minister after it was too late because they killed so many people already. And I'd say, and I told him, is your minister removed? And he said, I don't know. And I said, can't you see what's happening? This is uncontrollable. This is at the point of time where you have to make up your mind. You can't continue following something that's failing. And this is the impression I got. I got off the plane. It was during the curfew, so I couldn't find a cab to take me back. So I had to wait an hour at the airport, and then the curfew was lifted. I went straight home. I put my bag down, and I went to Tahrir. And I just knew this was the only place I could be. This is the only place I wanted to be. I mean, when I'd leave Tahrir, it was really funny. I mean, I hated being outside that little square. It was, to me, when you went outside, everything was crazy. But in there, everything made sense. Everybody was there. They understood what we were doing. They understood why we were doing this. But outside, there were people calling for, they were saying that we need stability. You should back down. We've achieved enough, and it wasn't enough. We haven't achieved anything. So it was very, I mean, being inside the square was very, very emotional, very emotional.
So, I mean, you're a journalist. So, I mean, how did that affect the way that you kind of were part of the revolution? Were you being a journalist or were you being an Egyptian?
It was very tricky. It was very tricky. I mean, in my mind, the line between journalism and activism has always been clear. But I found myself questioning that when I was there. How can you keep that line clear when you're in a conflict and you are a part of it? It's very much related to what you're doing. And I found myself the other days switching between both. I mean, sometime I'd be a reporter, I'd be taking pictures, doing interviews, documenting what's happening, trying to talk to both sides, trying to convey everything that's happening. But then on other times, I just couldn't do it. Like on that day when we were attacked by the camels and the horses and everything, and I was there. And then what happened is I was standing right there at the front line, and I decided to go help. And then I found two people carrying two guys who had fallen. To this day, I don't know if they're alive or dead, but they'd fallen. They were bleeding from their heads, and I helped carry them back to the field hospital that we had. And at that time, I just knew I couldn't just be standing there reporting. And I found myself in there. I just had, I mean, had to take part in this. It just didn't make sense anymore.
And what is the situation like now?
Well, right now there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of chaos, if you would say. And that scares a lot of people, but I see it as a very normal process. You've just had a revolution that has removed a 30-year autocratic rule that had control over everything. So now everything had a piece that's missing. So we're working our way through that chaos, through that confusion. And I mean, I would have been worried if there was no confusion. Then that means that someone somehow hijacked everything that's happened. But I'm hoping, and I'm working so hard right now along with other people in the capacity that I can to come out of this with what we have always dreamed of, with a fair new constitution that protects the people, with a proper democratic rule, with a more liberal rule. It's really an ongoing process, and I don't think it will end soon. I think this is an ongoing process, and people have to recognize that, because a lot of people think this has been going on for too long. Why do we have so much insecurity? Why do we have so much chaos? But this is normal. This is normal, and people have to recognize it's an ongoing fight. It's not easy feat. You've been part of revolution. It doesn't just end.
Mm-hmm. I mean, journalism and voices from the ground are very important during these kind of uprisings, but I mean, we've seen in other similar situations, there's been a lot of misinformation, especially from government sources and propaganda. What would you just say to people, you know, for example, from the UK, who are trying to find the genuine voices? How can they sort out what really is the truth of the situation?
Well, I'd always say that, I mean, a lot of there was a lot of misreporting going on, but the truth is, what happened through social media is you had this mass amount of people on the ground who were telling you what they're seeing. So maybe you can disregard one person as lying, maybe you can disregard 10 people as lying, but when you have 1,000 people telling you what they're seeing, and it's exactly the same thing, then there's force. When everyone on the street is saying there's this horrible amount of fighting going on, and then on the state-run TV you get a picture of the Nile and little cars passing by and everything, then it's very clear that there's something wrong. So I think what social media did is we had this mass mode of correcting it ourselves and curating what was happening, if you would say so.
Well, I have to say I don't know if I'm allowed to be, but I feel proud of the Egyptians for what they've achieved. So I don't mean to patronize, but you know, like as I said, there's a piece of Egypt in my heart. So I think it's just amazing. It was amazing to watch it, and I just can't imagine what it was like. So thank you for sharing that with me.
Thank you. I would tell you that a lot of the support we get is when I'd go home and then I'd be sitting there on my computer and I'd be getting all those emails and Facebook messages and Twitter messages from support from all over the world, and that it kind of kept you sane when everything was going crazy around you. So thank you for that.
Thank you.